brought to you by The Smitten Kitten, non-toxic quality sex toys and supplies. Visit smittenkittenonline.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome, everyone, to Sex Out Loud. I needed the boost of that great voice of my announcer today. So thank you, Cooper Beckett. Cooper Beckett is my official announcer. He announces the show, and he also has his own show, his own podcast called Life on the Swing Set. And I needed that boost because I'm having horrible back pain today, folks. Really, really bad. So I'm propped up here ready to do this show. But if I nod off, I hope someone will call in and refresh me. My guest today is author, historian, and speaker Hannah Blank, who will join me in a few minutes. And we're live, which is why I just told you about my back hurting. So we're taking your calls, and I love to get your calls, although some of you have been shy lately, which seems crazy to me that my listeners would be shy. Please give us a call, 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. You can also post questions on facebook.com/asktristan and on Twitter at sexoutloudradio. Hannah has written a fascinating book on the history of heterosexuality, and I just want to read you a little excerpt to give you a taste. As a culture, we are fairly sure that heterosexuality is natural, normal, and desirable, and that heterosexual love is among life's most validating and positive experiences. We organize heterosexuality around the principle of love now more than we have at any time in the past. The experience of romantic love is what legitimizes not only marriage, but separately legitimizes sexual activity and the having of children as well. Yet this love experience, this inherent part of heterosexual existence, it seems, can also be as anarchic, as fleeting, and as prone to slip out of our control as our ancestors warned us it would be. Perhaps this, as much as anything, explains the enduring fantasy allure of the happily ever afters of the wonderful world of Disney. The moody, sparkly vampire love and angst of the blockbuster Twilight novels. And the shelves upon shelves of romance novels in every bookstore. Only in fantasy and fiction is the heterosexual love adventure something we can genuinely control and therefore trust. Regardless of how hard we try to make our real life heterosexuality in its image. So the word heterosexual was first coined in a letter by Carl Maria Kurt Benny in 1868. And its first appearance in the medical literature was in that classic by Kraft Ebbing, Psychopathia Sexualis. We are going to talk about this and a whole lot more with the woman who literally wrote the book on heterosexuality. Or a book. Hannah Blank spends her time thinking, learning, writing, and speaking at the crossroads of bodies, self, and culture. Joyfully spanning the town-gown divide as well as the mind-body split, her books include the histories Straight, the Surprisingly Short History of Heterosexuality, and Virgin, the Untouched History. The cult classic sex and body acceptance book, Big, Big Love, a sex and relationships guide for people of size and those who love them, and numerous other books. A former scholar of the Institute for Teaching and Research on Women at Towson University, Hannah is a popular speaker and guest lecturer on topics from the history of the hymen to the politics of getting on top. Her current projects include books on MFK Fisher, the rights of human bodies, and the thoroughly gory history of gynecology. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Hannah.
Thanks so much, Tristan. It's a pleasure.
So what prompted you to write this book, Straight, The Surprisingly Short History of Heterosexuality?
Well, in some ways, it was an offshoot of my work on virginity. And in other ways, it was very much a personal book. My former partner, who I was with for a decade and a half, is somebody who was diagnosed male at birth and who later discovered that he did not actually have male chromosomes. Instead, he had XXY sex chromosomes. It's a very common chromosomal disorder called Klinefelter syndrome. And what I started to wonder was, okay, so given that I have a queer sexual history and I've identified as queer on and off, but then I'm in this relationship with somebody who appears to be male and people take this person as male, because you can't see genes, of course, for 15 years, does that make, you know, am I straight now? Does this make me straight? And then I started trying to answer that question, and I ended up looking to the history of heterosexuality to help me try and find an answer that actually made some sense.
And in the book, you cover a lot of ground, namely around biological sex, gender, sex, the activity, sexual orientation, as you discuss this historical look at heterosexuality. One thing I particularly love that you wrote was, this is a quote, "Describing any two sexes or genders as opposites is not fact. It is merely an outdated and inaccurate custom." But my question for you is, I totally feel you on that, but why does it persist? The phrase opposite sex, I feel like I hear it every day.
Well, I think part of the reason that it persists is that it is convenient. It's really easy shorthand. And you know, it's also a cultural habit. It's a cultural habit that is very, very old. We haven't really had any widespread recognition of the fact that there are more than two possible sexes, even just biologically, in the West until really recently. And there are still a lot of people who don't recognize that. So when you have a species that is, you know, pretty much sexually dimorphic, it's not such a crazy thing that we would develop a culture that strongly, you know, mimics that in its language and in its thought. And I do think that that's starting to change slowly, but it's only been able to change as quickly as we've been able to sort of recognize that there are other sexes out there.
Yeah, and what strikes me too is that as you start to unpack some of these things in the book, it's almost like you have to just keep unpacking and unpacking, because you can't, you know, you as a historian, but also as a critical thinker, can't simply say, okay, well, let's talk about sexual orientation. Let's talk about men and women. You're like, oh wait, hold the phone. Now we have to talk about men and women. So it seems like there was a lot to grapple with in this one tiny orientation. I mean, did you feel that writing it?
Oh, absolutely. It was a tremendous amount of work just figuring out what kind of language I could use to talk about this and what would people understand and how much did I have to explain, you know, sort of how far did I have to tease this out? How much of it did I have to unpack before I could meaningfully talk about this idea of sexual orientation? Because if you say, you know, heterosexuality is when a man loves a woman, okay, well, then you have to define your terms. What's a man, what's a woman, and what's love?
Right, right.
Those are big, complicated questions, and they each have their own history. And so you end up having to dig into all of those things just to explain your starting point.
And do you think heterosexual owes in part its name and existence and classification to people wanting to qualify what is not heterosexual?
Absolutely. I have a bit in the book called The Degenerate in the Mirror, where I talk about the role that heterosexual people played in identifying themselves and in creating this word and this idea for the rest of the culture. Because the term heterosexual, like the term homosexual, they were actually coined at the same time, comes to us from the second half of the 19th century. And there's a lot of anxiety in the second half of the 19th century about who gets to be in power. The economy is changing. The social landscape is changing. People's sort of idea of what their sort of hereditary landscape is like is changing enormously. The way people make money is changing, how people live, how people organize their families. All of this is changing, and people are very, very concerned about how they can establish themselves as legitimate in this new world where, you know, it seems like everything is up for grabs. And one of the ways that you establish yourself as legitimate, if you're a late Victorian era, Westerner, Northern European or American especially, is you want to establish yourself as being sexually normal. And so there's a real pervasive concern with all kinds of degeneracy. There were a lot of panics about masturbation, including people believing that you could literally masturbate yourself to death.
Has not been proven, I don't think.
No, I've been trying for years and I'm still here.
I know. I don't think there's one single case on the books. So everyone out there, if you're worried, you can't masturbate to death. Go ahead.
No, but go ahead and try. Give it a shot.
Of course. Have a go.
And so there's a lot of panic about masturbation, about children's sexuality begins to become a big, big, big concern then, sort of the degeneration of children. And same-sex sexuality is also on the radar there as a form of degeneracy. So is prostitution. So are various other kinds of sexual vices. And one of the ways that people had in which to sort of identify themselves as normal and upstanding and respectable and therefore deserving of power in this new world is to say, I am heterosexual. And you see, here I am performing all of these rituals of heterosexuality and the way they're supposed to be performed. I'm marrying people in the right way. I'm falling in love with people in the right way. I'm forming my family and my household in the right way with the right kinds of power dynamics and the right kinds of economic dynamics. I am doing it all right. And so people began to use the word heterosexual. Kraft Ebing uses it first in Psychopathia Sexualis as a synonym for another term, which is normal sexual.
I was so struck by that. That was something I learned in this book, that there was a term called normal sexual. And in some cases it was used, these were just used interchangeably.
Yeah, Kraft Ebing basically doesn't draw a distinction between them. And here's the other thing Kraft Ebing doesn't do. And I think this is fascinating and really telling. Kraft Ebing never defines or describes what normal sexual or heterosexual is. It's assumed that the reader knows.
And that's what's so fascinating, I think, about this whole book, is that we all, everything is sort of circling around heterosexual, and we're all just assuming, A, that it's existed for years and years and years, which it hasn't, which you prove, and B, that we all know what it means.
Right. And what we really know is that this is a really convenient catch-all term for normal, whatever normal is at the time that you're using the term. Because what was normal in 1875, for instance, in a marriage between a man and a woman, would not pass for normal today. And so, but you're still going to call both of those marriages, this is a normal marriage. I'm in a normal marriage. It's a heterosexual marriage. It's man, woman, absolutely. But no, we're not looking at the same thing. Not at all.
And this echoes something that was said, on the convention floor at the Republican National Convention recently. But before we go there, we've got to take a break and hear from some of our fabulous sponsors who make this show possible. Remember, everyone, we're live and taking your phone calls. So you can call us at 866-472-5788 with questions for me or Hannah, or your musings on heterosexuality and normal sex. Let's take a break. And when we come back, more with Hannah Blank on Sex Out Loud.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning Expert Guide Sex Education Series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Enhance pleasure for you and the ones you love to love with Astroglide personal lubricants. Astroglide provides that extra oomph in creating a better and more exciting sexual experience. Astroglide's wide product range allows you to pick and choose based on personal preferences. All the products are also latex condom compatible, allowing for safer sex practices. Astroglide values the benefits of a fun and healthy sex life as part of a happier lifestyle, and so should you. For more information and a free sample, visit astroglide.com and get your sex life to blast off today.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I want to thank one of my fabulous sponsors, the Smitten Kitten, a progressive sex toy store for everybody, specializing in high-quality sex toys and supplies. Go to smittenkittenonline.com, and you can use the coupon code Tristan for 20% off your order. We are talking today with my guest, historian and author Hannah Blank, about her recent book, Straight, The Surprisingly Short History of Heterosexuality. And we're live, which means you can call in and talk to Hannah, talk to me, tell us what you think about heterosexuality. Come on, you've got to have an opinion about that. At 866-472-5788, 866-472-5788. You can also post questions on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio or on Facebook.com/AskTristan. Now, before the break, we were talking about heterosexuality as kind of as normal and yet undefined. And this makes me think of the Ann Romney's recent speech at the Republican National Convention, where she referred to her marriage to Mitt Romney as a real marriage, which really echoes some of the concepts in this book. The idea that the definition of heterosexuality is quite fuzzy, but it's also steeped in fantasy and amazement and wonder and fairy tale. I'm wondering if you'll talk a little bit about that. You know, I've talked about that in other contexts around monogamy, around marriage, but it's interesting that the sexual orientation itself doesn't have a clear definition.
Well, sexual orientation is a convenience. It's something that was built as a political convenience. A lot of people don't know that both heterosexuality and homosexuality were actually coined as part of a response to a sodomy law. There was a German sodomy law that was under discussion in the 1860s, and both heterosexuality and homosexuality were coined by somebody who was protesting that law as a way to try to make different expressions of sexuality seem more alike. So you've got sexuality, you've got some homo, you've got some hetero, but it's all kind of the same thing. And it was at that time conveniently undefined, except for sort of the direction in which the sexuality was focused, that homosexuals were looking to the same sex and heterosexuals were looking to a different sex for the expression of their sexuality. And that's, that is not a very comprehensive definition.
No, especially for the way we live today, I think.
And that was deliberate, that that was not a very comprehensive definition. Because what Carl Maria Carpini was trying to do in protesting the sodomy law was basically to say, look, human beings, regardless of who they choose to have sex with, could violate a sodomy law. Mm-hmm. And therefore, is it not unjust of the state to preferentially punish one category of possible people breaking a sodomy law, people who do it with another person of the same biological sex, and to not prosecute people who were doing it otherwise? So it was actually intentional that it wasn't terribly well defined.
Now, I'm wondering how you feel about a semi-recent development, which is that some people who practice BDSM or who identify themselves as kinky say that they consider doing SM an orientation. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that, since you've written about this whole history about sexual orientation.
Well, I think that that is as valid a use of the concept of a sexual orientation as any. I think that the idea of an orientation is certainly not limited to being oriented towards a certain sexual biology. That's how we tend to use it. That's how we've come to be familiar with the idea. But there's no reason that it has to be limited to that. There's nothing sacred about it. There's certainly nothing scientific about it. Nobody's been able to actually locate any actual, you know, material essence of sexual orientation. So why can't we talk about being oriented, let's say, as a sexual dominant? Mm-hmm. I think that that seems like actually kind of more informative in some ways to me than saying I particularly like people without genital outies.
Right, right. Well, and I think that the people you talk to would say that first and foremost, BDSM is the lens through which they express their desire, and gender may or may not, the gender of the people you play or have sex with may or may not come into it, but first and foremost, they feel like the strongest pull or the strongest way that they would desire and define that core desire is through kink.
And I would agree. As a top myself, I feel very strongly that, you know, if I'm interested in somebody sexually, I want to know whether or not that dynamic is going to work. And for me, for my money, what plumbing they come with is not nearly so important.
You can work with it.
There are things that we can do. We have our ways.
Now, one of the other things you talk about in the book that I think is fascinating is how male-centric these modes of sexological research have been through the years and continue to be, and how that may actually impact sexual orientation. That we've been working with these models that are essentially studied around and based on men, and that sexual orientation may in fact be different for women. And this calls to mind a whole bunch of research. I mean, the first thing it made me think of was when they hooked people up to various machines and showed them different kinds of porn. And the men who identified as straight liked seeing women, and the gay men, you know, liked seeing men. But the women across the board of every sexual orientation just really liked all these different kinds of sexual depictions. Do you think it's different? Do you think women's sexual orientation is different than men's?
I think that women are taught to look for sexual information in more people, because women are, I think women are taught to view other women sexually. Even, you know, women who have no interest in having sex with other women are taught to view other women sexually and to understand and appreciate what makes other women sexually attractive, because women are really pressured to pay a lot of attention to who their competition is. This is a patriarchy. And if you want to land the top, the alpha male, you've got to compete with all of these other women. And you've got to, you know, we are schooled from childhood to compare ourselves, our physical selves, and our sort of erotic presentation to other women. So I think that that plays a role, and it would be very difficult to tease that out from what is actually sort of hardwired, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there is a lot of work to be done just figuring out how much of people's desires are learned and how much of people's desires are innate and how that works. That's not something that we have a lot of good research on. And so it's very exciting to me when people are starting to do some of this research, like the studies that you talked about, but also, for instance, Lisa Diamond's work. She's a psychologist who's at University of Utah. And she wrote a book a couple of years ago called Sexual Fluidity, and she followed a cohort of young women through a lengthy period of time. I think it was 10 years. And she followed them through whatever relationships they were in across that period of time. And some of them were in relationships with women and in relationships with men. Some of them, you know, went the other way. Some of them stayed only in relationships with women or only in relationships with men. And it really was a fascinating little look at sort of the plasticity of desire and the way that that can change over a woman's lifespan. And part of that, I think, also comes from the fact that women have, in some ways, more permission to have sex that's not necessarily always heterosexual, because women are lower on the status ladder and you have less to lose.
I totally agree with that. I mean, I've always said that if a woman comes to you and says, oh my God, last night things got a little out of control and I kissed my girlfriend and we had sex, people are like, okay, cool, you were experimenting. And if a guy says that, all of his friends are like, dude, you're gay.
Dude, you're a fag.
You're gay, and right. It's done. Okay.
Right.
Let's talk more about this, but let's take a break and hear from our fabulous sponsors, including WeVibe, the world's best-selling couples vibrator. Go to we-vibe.com to find out all about it. More with Hannah Blank when we return on Sex Out Loud.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Turn off the TV and pick up the remote control that is sure to please. Worn while making love, the WeVibe 3 features whisper quiet motors that will keep you anything but quiet. We can't help it if the rechargeable battery lasts longer than you do. Learn more about the world's number one vibrator for couples at WeVibe.com. WeVibe. Share the pleasure.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning Expert Guide Sex Education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
experience love with a little help from nature's soothing ingredients with AstroGlide Natural Personal Lubricant. This all-natural and botanical formula lets you get in touch with your wild side, all while keeping it green. AstroGlide Natural Personal Lubricant is glycerin, paraben, and alcohol-free, and it's made with aloe vera, vitamins C and E, and chamomile. But with the same second-only-to-nature feel that you get with your regular AstroGlide. Visit astroglide.com to get your free sample and start hitting it green between the sheets today.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. My guest today is Hannah Blank, and we've been talking about her book, Straight, The Surprisingly Short History of Heterosexuality. In 2003, I wrote a piece for The Village Voice called The Queer Heterosexual, where I argued that people who are coupled with someone of a different gender and labeled heterosexual by others were really quite queer, or could be. I consider queer heterosexuals to have non-normative genders, relationship styles, sexual expressions, as well as queer aesthetics and politics with strong allegiances to queer communities and movements. So I'm wondering, Hannah, this piece, first of all, is almost 10 years old and I still get letters about it. People still quote it. People still talk and ask me about it. In light of your exhaustive history of heterosexuality, what do you think of the concept of the queer heterosexual?
Well, I think that there are certainly queer people who are perceived as heterosexual, and there may be queer people who identify as heterosexual. I've got around and around with this myself in my own life. I mean, as I said, part of the reason that I wrote this book was that I spent 15 years with a partner who, was genetically intersex, but presented as male. And I got read as straight all the time. Even though I've been queer identified and I've had a lot of relationships with people of my own biological sex. And now my primary partner is a trans guy. And I'm continuing to get read as a straight woman most of the time. But then again, I got read as a straight woman when I was just a plain old queer femme out with other queer women, because that's one of the things that happens when you're high femme, as you no doubt have noticed. So I've gone around this question a lot, and I think that what the question that really needs to be answered here is queer about your culture? Is it about where you ally yourself politically and socially and culturally? Or is it primarily about, literally about what you're doing sexually and with whom? Or is it some combination of those things? And I think that that's a difficult question. And I'm certainly not about to venture a definitive answer to that. I look very heterosexual when I'm with my partner. And I'm not identifying as heterosexual, neither is my partner. But the world is seeing us that way. So it is complicated and it's tricky.
Yeah. And I think that it's not even just about looks and aesthetics. Like you said, it also has to do with politics. And, you know, the people I think who responded most to that column were people who have been labeled heterosexual and sort of fit the box definition, right? But don't feel heterosexual because one of them is a crossdresser, or because they have a really non-normative relationship style, or because they're kinky, or because, you know, there's all these, or one of them's queer and the other one's not queer, but by very virtue of being with a queer person, again, their sexual orientation is sort of in question. So I think that's, yeah, you know, that's the question. And it reminds me of a section in your book where you talk about how heterosexuality succeeds or fails to succeed at incorporating same-sex desire and attraction and sex into its category. This is your so-called wide stance theory.
Oh, yes, my little wide stance theory.
A super clever use of that. So I wonder if you'll talk a little bit about the wide stance theory.
Well, we were just talking about how women actually have a pretty easy time culturally with having, you know, erotic interest or having sex with other women and still sort of, and just having that sort of be okay. You know, they're not necessarily going to be labeled as lesbians. They're not necessarily going to be labeled as queer. Whereas when men have sex with other men or erotically interested in other men, it's sort of this instant labeling of you're a homo. And so there's this whole really fascinating thing that happens when men have sex with other men on the down low, which is that if you perform heterosexuality well enough and you, you know, you follow all the rules in your public life, then you have the power and you have the cultural capital, really, to sort of spend some of that cultural capital, retain your status, and have sex on the down low. And as long as you don't get found out in the wrong way, you can get away with it for a really long time. A lot of people my age and older will remember Rock Hudson, who kind of everybody kind of knew he was probably gay, but who never actually came out until, you know, his death from AIDS kind of forced the issue. And I don't think he ever actually formally came out. I don't recall. But and of course, you've got all these political scandals, you know, all of the Larry Craigs and, you know, Bob Allens and Ted Haggards, who are getting sort of busted out of their conservative power niches because of the discovery that they are, in fact, trying to exploit this wide stance. And in many cases, they've been doing it for years until they get busted.
Of course. We've got a great reader question from Twitter, Biblio Butch. Thank you, Biblio Butch, for your questions. They're always smart. Biblio Butch says, I'm curious about how your work on virginity led to straight and how that's leading the way to work on gynecology. So that's an interesting question because one of your very popular books was A History of Virginity.
Yeah. Well, the question that came up over and over again when I was working on History of Virginity was, is virginity heterosexual? Because the type of virginity that gets the most press and the most play, the type of virginity that people always talk about, that sort of canonical virgin, is a woman who has never been penetrated vaginally by a penis. Now, this is this is only one of many, many things that human beings can do sexually. And certainly there's a first time for everything. So why is it? I wanted to answer this question in my book Virgin. Why is it that this one act has become the canonical virgin? Why is it that way? When there are so many other options, so many other ways that you could think about that. And so one of the things that came up as I was working on this was I kept looking at definitions of virginity, and, you know, I'm looking at the Bible and I'm looking at the Talmud, and I'm looking at all of these people discussing virginity, and they're all discussing something that happens between a woman's body and a man's body. And then it occurred to me to wonder if they're thinking of this as a heterosexual act. And so that got me looking into the history of heterosexual. Okay, well, if I'm wondering whether, say, the authors of Deuteronomy were thinking of virginity as having to do with heterosexuality, I better be damn sure that they had a concept of heterosexuality. And as it turns out, they didn't. Because, of course, you know, heterosexuality sort of got invented in the mid-19th century, and Deuteronomy was written just a few minutes prior to that. So I had to sort of tease out what virginity means and what virginity is in the absence of this idea of the heterosexual. And that that really made Virgin a very different book than it might otherwise have been. And it also alerted me to the fact that there was this huge, big history that people didn't know a lot about. And a few people had done some fantastic work on the history of heterosexuality, most notably my wonderful colleague Jonathan Ned Katz, who did, in fact, write the first book on the history of heterosexuality called The Invention of Heterosexuality. That came out in the 90s. But that there was still so much that I didn't know, that I'd never come across, that I had to go digging to find about this history of this quality that even I had assumed went all the way back to Deuteronomy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's another thing that comes across loud and clear in your book, is these ideas that science and history are fixed and objective and this is the way it is are so incredibly false. I mean, everyone brings their own agendas and their own biases to these studies, but then they get passed around as fact, not interpretation, essentially. We're interpreting a lot of things that we don't necessarily know about history.
Yeah, one of the things that I think people have to remember about both science and history is that they are performed by people. And people inevitably choose what to talk about and what not to talk about, and they choose how to interpret it and how not to interpret it. Human beings are actually not capable of being completely objective simply because we're limited and we have to pick what we talk about. So there is this sense that we have, and that honestly scientists often encourage, to look at science particularly as a truth-finding mechanism. Not just a fact-finding mechanism, but a truth-finding mechanism. And that's a really dubious thing to think about science. What science is it's a group, it's a consensus-building exercise. The idea behind science is to get enough people to reproduce results so that you get a consensus about what is actually factually true. And that's very different from having, you know, for instance, you see it all the time in the media, one study about sex comes out and all of a sudden it's in every headline everywhere, you know, that, you know, mothers who drink too much Diet Dr. Pepper during pregnancy will have gay daughters.
Right.
And suddenly that's the truth, you know, and that's not even a fact at that point.
Right. But it sinks in. I mean, especially around female sexuality, we've seen this with the G-spot. We've seen this with female orgasms. We've seen this with so-called female sexual dysfunction. One really bad study, which everyone pokes holes in, is picked up by the media and it becomes, you know, fact. Which is why, yeah, I think, you know, this is why I think people who actually do rigorous history with an eye toward, you know, for lack of a better word, the margins, like you, are really providing a resource here, a sort of companion to what everyone else is just assuming is the way things are or was the way things were. I feel like you're taking a much more rigorous approach and saying, hold on, what do we really know about heterosexuality?
Well, thank you. And yes, that is part of what I try to do as an historian who works with medicine and therefore with the biomedical sciences. I spend a lot of time not just looking at, you know, what's a recent study and what do the recent studies say, but what's the history of the research on this and what has science tried to tell us is true over time and how has that changed and how does that relate to what's going on culturally and, you know, how much can we trust what science has to tell us about sexuality in light of this, which I think is always a really fascinating question to ask. And I think the answer varies.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to take another break and hear from our sponsors, including Astroglide. Astroglide personal lubricants make sex better. Get a free sample. Find out how at astroglide.com. We're still taking your calls. If you want to give us a call, 866-472-5788. More with Hannah Blank when we return on Sex Out Loud.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Jennifer Pritchett from The Smitten Kitten. We're huge Tristan Taramino fans just like you, and we're so proud to be the presenting sponsor for Sex Out Loud. If you're not already familiar with Smitten Kitten, here's the deal. We're an education-based sex toys and supplies retailer. We sell high-quality, non-toxic, and artist-made sex toys, organic lubes, and all kinds of kinky stuff, including hard-to-find vegan options. We cater to an incredibly diverse clientele and specialize in helping you find new sexual interests, expand your sexual skill sets, and even troubleshoot sexual issues with you. We are here to help you feel confident and sexy. We spend a ton of time and energy curating our selection of products to make sure we have the best selection, be it silicone dildos, pegging and strap-on equipment, vibrators, or ethically made porn. Our mission is to make sex-positive culture accessible to everyone. Don't miss our free streaming explicit educational videos, many of which were directed by Tristan herself, on our website, smittenkittenonline.com. Get inspired by Tristan's amazing show, Sex Out Loud, and then visit us online at our Minneapolis location.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Follow the Voice America Talk Radio Network on Twitter. We're at Voice America TRN. You'll get the latest fix on what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and general happenings that you should know about at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Now you don't have to miss anything when you're away from your home or office. Just go to twitter.com/Voice America TRN or follow along with us at Voice America TRN, the Voice America Talk Radio Network. We're on the cutting edge of social media. Can you keep up?
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I've been talking today with author, historian, and speaker Hannah Blank all about her book, Straight, The Surprisingly Short History of Heterosexuality. I want to shift gears here a little and talk about one of your classic books, the first time I became aware of you, and it's actually been reissued. It's back in print. It's called Big, Big Love, A Sex and Relationships Guide for People of Size and Those Who Love Them. Why do people of size need their own sex book?
Well, let me first say that the new Big, Big Love is actually a new book. It's a lot of same content, a lot of new content, but it's been completely rewritten from the ground up, conducted a whole new survey for it. And that actually leads me into the answer to your question. Why do people of size need their own sex book? Well, number one, people of size need their own sex book because our bodies are, in fact, different. Not in terms of genitals. Genitals actually stay pretty much the same regardless of what your body size is. But what happens with bigger bodies, the way they move, the way they operate in terms of positioning and finding ways to move your body when you're having sex, that's different. The types of sex you can have are actually different, because those of us who are big, we have places where you can have erotic sensation where skinny people don't even have places. And so there's actually quite a lot to talk about there. And there's also a lot of cultural stuff and psychological stuff. There's a lot of, I hate the word baggage. It kind of annoys me, but there are a lot of sort of things that sort of cling to a bigger body in a culture like ours, where bigger bodies are so stigmatized and where fat is so stigmatized. And it's not like thin people necessarily get a free pass to having a fantastic, you know, and healthy and completely, you know, uninhibited relationship to their bodies, especially when it comes to sex. And for fat people, that it ups the ante. It makes that harder, because you live in a culture that tells you your body's not sexy. No one's ever going to think your body is sexy. You're probably never going to have sex. And if you do, it'll be in spite of your size. So those are some of the many reasons that people of size really do need their own books about sex. And another big reason too, and one of the reasons that I did a big survey for both editions of Big, Big Love and interviewed lots, I mean, literally hundreds of people, is because we lack things in our culture that reflect the sex lives that we do have. We don't see them. We don't hear about them.
Right. And in fact, you know, we know that the bodies of most Americans, at least, fit into not a size 2 or a size 4. There are more people who are of size than who are skinny.
Yeah. I mean, statistically, that is true. And, you know, it's really kind of interesting to me that I've ended up now writing twice the only book that's out there that is aimed at, you know, somewhere around 90 million Americans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, tonight, Epifora of heyepifora.com, who is the queen of sex toys on the internet and sex toy reviews, is filling in for my associate producer, and she's been monitoring the Twitter feed and live tweeting. And Epifora, because she wants to cover all ground all the time, says, can Hannah tell us about some great sex toys she would recommend for plus size folks?
Well, I'm going to start with the sort of the mother of all sex toys. The Hitachi Magic Wand is a really, really good bet for bigger folks. One of the issues that comes up, especially for bigger women, if you've got a belly, is that there may be reach issues in terms of actually being able to handle your genitals as the ways that you want to. And having a sex toy with a handle on it is a super, super thing to have. I love the Hitachi. The Wall also works really well for a lot of big women. And I also encourage people to go, and especially if you're dildo shopping, to go into your friendly neighborhood feminist sex toy boutique or look online and look for things that are longer than you might think you actually want. Because again, the principle of having the handle really makes a big difference. Sometimes people, you know, get a little skittish about finding sex toys and they think, oh, I don't want to get something too big. Well, there is no rule that says you have to insert the whole thing.
Correct.
So getting something with a little extra length that gives you a little more, a little bit more to work with can really make a lot of difference in terms of your ease of use.
There's a great dildo with a handle. It's a G-Spot one by Tantus. I'm hoping Epifora is going to text me the name of it right this very second. It's quite long, and I also find it good, not just for people of size, but also people with mobility issues, because there's so much less reaching around because it actually has a handle, and it's a really good G-Spotter. Epifora is, of course, going on and on about the pure wand and the Enjoy pure wand. She says she doesn't know the Tantus one. Okay. When I find out the Tantus one, I'll put the link on the website. It has G in the name, but I forget what it's called. Okay. I think in closing, I would just love to hear about one of your latest projects, because I know you're working on about 100 simultaneously. Tell me about one of them.
Well, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the book that's coming out next, which will be out in late December from 10 Speed Press. It's called The Unapologetic Fat Girl Guide to Exercise and Other Incendiary Acts. I'm a movement coach, off and on. I've been exercising for years. One of the things that I write about in Big, Big Love is that, sex is exercise and exercise is good for your sex life, because the happier your body is and the happier you are in your body, the easier it's going to be for you to be able to use your body in ways that give you pleasure. And the more stamina you're going to have more sex. So, I wanted to follow up the new Big, Big Love with a book on how to make that more possible. So I've got the Unapologetic Fat Girl's Guide to Exercise and Other Incendiary Acts coming out. If you're a fat guy, feel free to pony up and get yourself a copy of that too. It's, you know, I don't judge. So that's very exciting. I'm really looking forward to having that come out and hopefully do for folks around movement and exercise what Big, Big Love does for sex.
Fantastic. Okay. So I looked it up. The dildo I'm talking about is the Tantus G-Force, which I'm sure you can find anywhere on the web. Thank you so much for being on the show, Hanna.
You're so welcome.
Hanna Blank's latest book, Straight, The Surprisingly Short History of Heterosexuality, was just released in paperback by Beacon Press. Find out more about her at hannablank.com and follow her on Twitter at Hanna Blank. All these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. Tune in next week when my guests will be two of the queer porn world's biggest icons, Courtney Trouble and Dylan Ryan. Until then, I encourage you to keep the discussion going on Facebook.com/AskTristan, on Twitter at SexOutLoudRadio, and in your own life. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.